Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Right for the time being, please hold your calls because we have this Jeffrey Smith, and we're going to be talking about his book, Seeds of Destruction. And basically, this is the fascinating subject. We've seen a lot of old reports recently about the Federal Drug Administration. And we find out that Vioxx has been left on the market. And as a result of that, why, between 88,000 and 139,000 Americans may die of a heart attack or stroke. And the FDA had known going back to the early 2000s that this was a dangerous drug, that that there was a marked increase in the incidence of heart attack and stroke, and yet they left that on the market. And now, of course, Celebrex, they're finding an increased incidence of heart disease if you take higher doses of Celebrex. And then, of course, we find the problems with Advil, which is the old Naprosyn, comparing the incidence of heart attack with people who are not taking anything at all. Well, we have real problems with our Federal Drug Administration. We saw recently where one of the congressmen who was in charge of writing that legislation, that the Medicare Drug Act, he didn't. He, of course, left office, and he stayed on in Washington, D.C., though. He took a job for $650,000 a year with a company that works with the drug companies. Now, here's a man who writes the legislation on drugs and then gets a job working for the drug companies for $650,000 a year, plus the possibility of a $200,000 bonus. And unfortunately, this is the way the government works. And when you give power to people, they will misuse it. Unfortunately, there are very, very few idealists who are really willing to take a stand and do what's right. Well, with us this evening is Jeffrey Smith, who's taken a stand. He doesn't work for government. He's an investigative journalist, but he's done a tremendous job going into the background of the genetically engineered food. And a lot of people say, oh, well, it's only crazy people who are concerned about genetically engineered food. And I will tell you, after reading his book, I am very, very concerned about what they've done to the American people and to the people of the world. Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Why don't you pick up on the basic theme we were following?
Well, what's happening in the news today about the conflict of interest in the Food and Drug Administration is not news at all to those of us who've been investigating the FDA for years. There's a whole long history of collusion and working close with the industries that they're supposed to regulate. For example, Ralph Moss, an investigator, revealed that Searle had known about tumor-producing potentials of certain items but had simply given the FDA fraudulent data, he wrote. And also that Monsanto's company study found that PCBs caused tumors in rats, but they ordered the conclusion to be changed to slightly tumorigenic and does not appear to be carcinogenic. So they're sort of giving away their power to what they are now understanding to be their clients. Their clients are not the American people, but their clients are the pharmaceutical companies.
But don't many of those people working for the FDA end up going to work for the drug companies, or they're on a stipend from the drug companies while they're giving their professional opinions about those drugs?
Exactly. There's a lot of financial relationships that have been established. Sometimes they go from the drug companies to the FDA, and sometimes in the reverse order.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment or two with our special guest today, Jeffrey Smith. You won't want to miss any part of this program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Jeffrey Smith. We're talking about his book. Why don't you pick up the story from there, Jeffrey?
Hey, well, What I've researched are the collusion and the conflict of interest in the Food and Drug Administration in relationship to genetically engineered foods. And there's a long history about that, unfortunately. It goes back to the 1980s when a genetically modified food supplement called L-tryptophan ended up responsible for the deaths of about 100 Americans and caused 5 to 10,000 to fall sick. Now, when the researcher went public with the fact that the food supplement came from a process of genetic engineering and said this raises the question about safety of genetically engineered products, the next month an FDA spokesperson blasted the epidemiologist who had made the statement, saying he should never have raised the question of genetic engineering because of what it might do to the industry. It also turns out that the industry was able to protect itself against the recriminations for having potentially caused this deadly epidemic because there was an alternative theory. Scientists said, the company changed its filter method in January 1989, and that was the real cause of the epidemic, not the genetic engineering of the bacteria. Well, the FDA withheld information from the public, which would have dismantled that whole approach, because it turns out hundreds of people got the disease during the 4 years prior to the change in the filter. Then, when the FDA was to testify before Congress, they never even mentioned that the food supplement was genetically engineered. They blamed the whole thing on health fraud schemes and took all L-tryptophan off the market, not just the brand that was genetically engineered. So this was an early indication of the position that the FDA had taken, hiding information from the public, hiding information from Congress, and protecting the biotechnology industry, which was almost certainly responsible, or I could say the genetic engineering of this particular bacteria was almost certainly responsible for this deadly epidemic in the 1980s, and many people are still suffering. Now, that was just the first incidence of a very long list. The next came when they were approving the first genetically modified drug in the United States, which was recombinant bovine growth hormone, or RBGH. And FDA scientists who complained that the application of the drug, which is injected into cows to increase their milk supply, that it might cause the public's health to be at risk. Well, the whistleblowers at the FDA were either fired, stripped of responsibilities, or forced out. The remaining whistleblowers had to write an anonymous letter to Congress claiming that there was fraud and conflict of interest in the Food and Drug Administration.
Hold that thought here for just a moment here. Okay, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. His book is Seeds of Deception, and it's subtitled Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of Genetically Engineered Food. Well, now, before we go on, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about why we should be concerned about this bovine growth hormone, recombinant bovine growth hormone? What possible harm can it do just to give cows a growth hormone so they produce more milk?
Well, the milk that comes from these cows is different than the milk from untreated cows. Research shows that it has increased levels of a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. Now, there are many studies on IGF-1. There was a study that showed that premenopausal women below the age of 50 with high levels of IGF-1 were 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer compared to those with low levels of IGF-1. It also turns out that men with high levels of IGF-1 were 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. Now, it turns out milk has IGF-1 in it anyway, and milk drinkers increase their levels of IGF-1. But the milk from cows treated with this RBGH has significantly higher levels of IGF-1. Now, in spite of that, in spite of the fact that the FDA's own scientists acknowledge that there's an increase in IGF-1, there was a man at the FDA who was in charge of policy, and he wrote a white paper from the FDA saying that if any company wanted to even dare to label their milk as from cows not treated with RBGH, they should also put on the label that according to the FDA there's no difference in the milk from cows treated or not treated. Now, this was not true because the scientists did acknowledge that there was a difference, but this was used by Monsanto, the makers of this RBGH, in court in the ways that it tried to sue certain dairies. Now, the who wrote this white paper? It turns out it was Michael Taylor, who before taking the reins at the FDA in charge of policy, was Monsanto's outside attorney, and later became Monsanto's vice president. So here's an example where someone left a relationship with Monsanto, the big biotech giant, went into the FDA. He was in charge of the policy over RBGH. He was in charge of the policy over genetically modified crops and food. He made very favorable decisions towards the industry and then got apparently rewarded by becoming the vice president of a biotechnology company.
Well, now, of course, how long have we had this recombinant growth hormone?
Well, it was approved in the early 1990s.
So, but 1990, and of course, these were animal studies, but are we beginning to see any more in the way of prostatic and breast cancer, or is it too early, really, in human beings to know?
Well, we don't have any studies that can link the injections specifically with disease. There's no studies that have been done to do that. We are seeing an increase in breast cancer and prostate cancer, but we can't conclusively say it's because of the RBGH. Like some, I was talking to one scientist doctor last month, and he said when he heard about RBGH, he predicted that there would be an increase in diabetes, in obesity, in breast cancer, and it turns out that there is. Now, it's possible that it's unrelated, but it's also possible that it's very related. The problem is, if you don't do the tests, we don't know.
And if you don't do the test, then you can, of course, go ahead and get the thing cleared by the FDA and give it to the public and just wait 20 years from now and find out the disastrous results and then say, gee, shucks, we had no idea. Now, what is any specific relationship between this new hormone, this IGF-1 hormone, and diabetes as such?
Well, this was a medical doctor explaining it to me, and he explained it in a way that there was a theoretical link, but it's not strong enough, and it's not researched enough to bring it out now. It needs more study. We do know that there are thousands and thousands of articles on relating IGF-1 and cancer. It's implicated in lung and colon cancer. I already mentioned breast cancer and prostate cancer, and it is in higher quantities in milk from cows treated with RBGH. That's as good as we can get right now. I can't connect the dots because we don't have the smoking gun of the specific research on the milk from treated cows and the human impact, because no one has done that research and no one was required to do that research. Other countries besides the United States have banned this. It's not approved in Canada. It's not approved in Japan or Europe. It is approved in the United States, and people believe it's largely approved only because of the influence by industry over the FDA. Michael Taylor wasn't the only one in the FDA that had associations with Monsanto. There was someone named Margaret Miller. She took a position after doing research on RBGH for Monsanto, took a position in the department at the FDA that evaluated her own research. And according to a letter from whistleblowers at the FDA, she arbitrarily increased the amount of antibiotics allowed in milk. Now, this was necessary in order to approve RBGH, because when you inject cows with RBGH, it increases the incidence of mastitis, or udder infection, which means that the dairy farmers have to increase their applications of antibiotics so that the amount of pus in the milk isn't too high. So in order to get the RBGH cleared, according to the FDA's own whistleblowers in the documents, they said that this woman, Margaret Miller, arbitrarily increased the amount of antibiotics 100-fold in milk, and therefore putting the public at risk.
Well, that's really a rather frightening thing. And, of course, I've been very, very skeptical about this all along, but somebody has to come up with the scientific facts, and unless you have the time to study this as you do, the average individual is never going to hear, really, of the very, very real danger that the American people face. Now, of course, it's not simply these two items, the recombinant growth hormone, and but there are lots of other items out there as well, aren't there?
Absolutely. The most commonly known genetically modified products are the crops, and there's soy, corn, cotton, and canola are the four major genetically modified crops. Now, genetic modification means that they take genes from a different species, they take it out of that species' DNA, and they insert it into the DNA of a different species. Now, they do it in order to carry a trait into the new species. Now, this is not a natural process. It combines genes that would never normally combine in an organism, so it's creating new life forms in a single instance, not parts of the billions of years of evolution. And what it does, in the case of these four major crops, there are two traits that they're genetically engineered to create. One is that it creates a tolerance for an herbicide. So you can spray the herbicide on the plant, and the plant does not die. Only the weeds growing around it die. Another set create their own pesticide in every cell of the plant, and so if a bug eats it, then the bug dies. Now, we eat that same plant, and we eat this pesticide. Now, it's not just these traits which may be a problem, but the very process of genetically engineering a DNA can cause all sorts of problems. And this is what I document in Seeds of Deception, not only the specific problems that can occur medically, but also the ways in which the government and industry have tried to cover up those problems. And when research scientists try and go public with their concerns, they're often fired or attacked or silenced or threatened. And I have an example of one UC Berkeley scientist who was going public with some incriminating information about how genetically modified corn had contaminated the indigenous Mexican corn varieties, and a senior Mexican government official allegedly threatened him, implying, "We know where your children go to school," trying to get him not to publish this research. He refused to bend. He got a fax from another senior Mexican government official who said, "If there's any economic danger at all to our entire country, we'll hold you personally responsible." Then, it was time for him to get tenure at UC Berkeley. He got a unanimous approval from the faculty. He got nearly unanimous from the people in the department and the greater area, but he ended up denied tenure by someone who had close ties to the biotech industry. And so he is taking them to task. He's going to file a lawsuit if they don't investigate and find out about this conflict of interest and give him a fair shot. But this is one example of many in which people who are trying to bring out the truth end up getting pounced upon by those with financial interests.
And, of course, really what's so tragic is the people out there are not hearing this story. You don't know where they have put the genetically modified foods, what they're in. And, of course, as you get into this further and further, you realize that they're playing with something they really don't understand. So, basically, of course, you said they put two things into the crops. One of them would be a herbicide so that they can spray it with Roundup, something like that. Exactly. And, of course, it won't affect the crop. But what happens to us who eat the crop that has this Roundup Ready genetic modification?
Well, what happens is, there could be many things. For example, in the UK, soon after the genetically modified soybean, which is resistant to Roundup herbicide, was introduced into the UK diet, there were the allergies to soy skyrocketed by 50%. Now, no follow-up studies were done to identify why there was an increase in allergies. However, here are some of the possible candidates. When you insert a gene into the DNA, it can create all sorts of damage to the DNA and all sorts of changed levels of expression of other genes. One gene chip monitored a single insertion of a gene and found that 5% of all the genes that were expressing changed their levels of expression. Now, this might explain why there's all sorts of changes in the nutrient levels of genetically modified soy, including the increase in an allergen called trypsin inhibitor.
And I think that what people have to understand is that every gene secretes or produces proteins, and that's the function of the genes of proteins, the very building blocks of life. When we get back, of course, we're going to be talking about already some of the incredible things that are happening when we begin dabbling into this. It's something completely unknown, the long-term results. We are experimenting on the entire American population. Most countries won't allow it, but our leaders do. I wonder why. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith. His book is Seeds of Deception. Incidentally, Radio Liberty does carry that book. That Seeds of Deception, you want to get it, you want to read it, you want to get a grasp on what we're talking about. Would you like to explain to our listeners how they actually go about forcing these genes into a molecule? Because this is an incredible thing. Basically, of course, the gene is forced into specific molecules, aren't they? Or are they sort of haphazard in the way they're forced in?
Absolutely. They describe it as a precise technology, but here I'll describe to you what they consider precise. Let's say you want to turn a crop into a pesticide-producing plant. So you take a gene from a bacteria that produces its own pesticide, and you make thousands of copies. But you also add an antibiotic-resistant marker gene, a promoter to turn it on, you make some changes in the genetic structure, and then you put it in a gene gun. And you blast thousands of these gene constructs into thousands of cells in a gene gun. And then you hope that some of those genes get into the DNA of some of those cells.
But you don't know where in the...
You don't know if it ends up. And the thing is, the process of insertion causes something that's well known called insertion mutation, which means they damage the section of the DNA near the insertion point. They can turn off genes, they can switch genes on, they can cause massive damage. In fact, years after genetically modified soy was introduced to our diet, they discovered that there was mutation in the DNA causing a section that was never part of nature before, which was long enough to potentially create some new novel protein that could be toxic or allergenic. And that might explain the increase in allergies that we've seen associated potentially with genetically modified soy. So that's another potential reason. Now, the process of insertion, you can't tell which one's got the DNA, which DNA has the new gene, so they douse the whole thing with antibiotics, killing almost all of them. The only ones that survive do so because they have now blasted into their DNA an antibiotic-resistant marker gene, which causes the cell to be invincible when sprayed with this particular antibiotic. But it stays in the food. So now we're eating food that has antibiotic-resistant marker genes. Now, the FDA's own scientists, in memos that were made public from a lawsuit, were appalled at this idea. They thought that this might create antibiotic-resistant diseases. Because they said, you put these genes into the intestinal flora of the general population, it could transfer into the bacteria there, it can mate with pathogenic bacteria, and we could be creating a whole new host of super diseases, diseases that are accidentally genetically engineered not to die when treated with antibiotics. Well, the FDA superiors, the political appointees, overruled their scientists and said, no problem, you can use the antibiotic-resistant marker. Now, the biotech company said, you know, you don't have to worry about antibiotic-resistant marker genes because the whole gene and the whole DNA is destroyed during digestion. They didn't show any evidence that really proved that, but it turns out the only human feeding study ever conducted verified that, first of all, genes are not completely destroyed during digestion, and it showed that the genetically modified gene that was put into the soybean that creates herbicide tolerance actually transferred to the bacteria inside the intestine.
Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith, and he's talking about, of course, what's happened. First of all, they force these genes into the molecules of the the soy or whatever it would be by shooting them in with a gun. They use a .22 caliber bullets, or at least the explosives from that. They actually shoot this, and it's very imprecise method. And now they've got these new products in the genes. These new gene has been introduced into the molecules, and so. Supposedly, this is... Now, would it be the molecule or would it be the helix? Because the gene is...
The DNA is a large molecule, okay. The helix strand. So you now have a foreign gene introduced into the DNA.
Right, okay.
We eat that DNA, and those same genes that were introduced are now found to have jumped from that DNA, from the food that we eat, and now take up residence inside the DNA of the gut bacteria. So now our bacteria is producing these foreign proteins, in the case of soybeans, the protein that creates herbicide tolerance, and we have no idea the medical implications of having these foreign proteins produced in our gut, which means it's possible that long after we decide to give up genetically modified soybeans, we could still be exposed over and over again to this foreign protein because it's now living inside us.
Well, now, what happened when they did feeding experiments? Were these feeding experiments with humans or with animals?
It was the only human feeding study. They took 7 human volunteers. They had colostomy bags. They had their lower intestines removed from a previous operation. And they looked inside the colostomy bag and found that the soy burger and soy milkshake, which they had fed them, had survived passage through the small intestine and through the stomach. But they also found in 3 out of the 7 human volunteers that they had inside their gut bacteria, inside the DNA, the gene that had been inserted into the soy from a previous time, even before they served them a meal. So it actually was there on a stable basis. Now, what this means is that we are creating these novel proteins inside us, inside our gut. Now, we don't know if these new novel proteins that have never before been part of our human food supply, we don't know if they're allergies. We know that the structure of the protein that's created by the soy is similar to 2 known allergens. And we also know that the insert, when you insert a gene into the DNA, the biotech industry said, oh, it's stable, it'll always stay the same. It turns out it changes. And so now we may have completely different genes inside our gut producing different proteins, ones that were never intended and never tested.
And one of the points you make in your book is when you do actually shoot the genes, and you're actually shooting them with like a propulsion into these molecules, this creates a genetic instability. Is that right?
Absolutely. Not only that, but the what they do is they attach to the gene a promoter. A promoter is like a light switch. It turns the gene on artificially, 24/7, around the clock, permanently, at full volume. That's because normally inside the DNA, the intelligence of the DNA determines which genes get turned on and which genes get turned off depending on what's needed. But they've never seen these foreign genes that you're being inserted, so they're turned on artificially with a promoter which comes from a virus. Now this particular promoter has been identified by scientists to contain what's potentially called a recombinant hotspot, which means that it could possibly cause genetic breakup and recombination, which you described as instability. So now we're sending these genes in with this hotspot into plants, which could possibly cause all sorts of genetic mutations. But what's worse is the promoter, which can potentially cause these hotspots, has also been found to transfer to gut bacteria. And another test found that it transferred to organs inside rats after a single meal. So this promoter might transfer, in theory, to our own gut's DNA, causing genetic instability and breakup. This promoter, which turns on these foreign genes, might also turn on genes at random inside the DNA in plants or inside our own DNA, which means it could cause an overproduction of allergies, toxins, carcinogens, anti-nutrients. We don't know.
We're working with a very, very substance of life, and people don't understand that, you know, this whole spiral helix is really so complicated. But on this spiral helix are all these DNA molecules, and of course they can be turned off, they can be turned on, and it's an amazing process by which it's done. And the body knows how to do that and how to regulate itself. And now suddenly you're putting in genes that are on all the time. And of course, one gene can influence 50 or 100 other genes. And so we've introduced things. We have no idea what the long-range result on this is. And anybody who speaks out against it is going to lose their job. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, not anyone. I won't, because I don't have anyone who's my boss.
We'll be right back here in just a moment with Jeffrey Smith. And welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith, and of course his book is Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and the Government Lies About the Safety of Genetically Engineered Food. And at telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, I would love to hear from you. But what we're really talking about, is the fact that they are experimenting, doing a mass experiment on the American people. Now, what is keeping these products out of Europe? In other words, why is it that in Europe these things are not widely used, whereas here in America, why, of course, they're being used and increased all the time?
Well, that has to do with the way that the media has been reporting genetic engineering. Studies have shown that the more people learn about genetic engineering, the less they trust genetically modified foods. And in Europe, I've been reading the press there for about a decade, comparing it to the coverage in the United States. In Europe, they have very concerned, the population is very concerned about the potential dangers. They've heard stories about scientists who've been fired, they've heard stories about damage to laboratory animals. They're aware of the potential dangers and they say no. And so, they knew about this way, way before Americans. In fact, most Americans believe they've never eaten a genetically modified food in their lives, even though most Americans eat them in every meal, because principally soy and corn and their derivatives are genetically engineered. So back in 1999, based on the concern expressed by consumers in Europe, Unilever, Britain's largest food manufacturer, declared that they would remove all genetically modified ingredients from their European brands. Within 1 week, every major food manufacturer in Europe followed suit, and that included McDonald's and Burger King and Nestle's and Safeway, all for their European brands. But they kept the genetically modified foods in the U.S. brands because the U.S. public was not aware of anything about genetic engineering. And so the reason why Europe has rejected it is not primarily because of the governments, but because of the consumers. And they have rejected it because the media reported it. So first of all, I want to honor you for having this conversation on your radio show, because it's extremely important that individuals around the United States realize the potential dangers of genetically modified foods, not only avoid them in their own lives, but then inform the manufacturers that they would prefer non-GM alternatives. With a certain percentage of people doing that, then we can have the same kind of landslide change that we saw in Europe that basically wiped out genetic engineering of foods in Europe.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Jeffrey Smith. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, the book starts out talking about, I think it was a potato, wasn't it? That was genetically modified potato, where the scientists who'd created this potato then began doing animal studies and found that the rats that ate this potato were dying in large numbers. What's the background to that story, and what happened to this doctor who was just trying to protect humanity?
Okay, this doctor, he was actually working under a grant from the UK government. And the grant was to determine what the ideal testing protocol would be for genetically modified crops before they were approved. He did find that the rats were damaged. They didn't actually die, but they did have potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tracts, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, and damaged immune system. He went public with his concerns and was a hero for about 2 days at his institute. Then allegedly two phone calls were placed from the Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director of the institute. The next morning, the scientist was fired by the director. He was silenced with threats of a lawsuit. His 20-member research team was dismantled, and the UK government never instituted the recommendations. In fact, the institute put out a series of statements that basically incriminated or rubbished, as they say in the UK, rubbished the scientist and his results and protected the industry. Well, he was eventually able to speak before Parliament, and that allowed him to get his data back and lifted the gag order, and he then published his research in The Lancet, a very prestigious journal, and it remains the most in-depth animal feeding studies ever conducted on genetically modified foods. Now, what it shows is very, very serious. He genetically engineered potatoes. They've never been introduced to the market, by the way, although they were intended to be. And the potatoes created their own insecticide. Now, he fed rats these potatoes, and the rats had serious problems. But he fed another series of rats regular potatoes that were spiked with this insecticide, and the rats didn't have these problems. And so it wasn't the insecticide that caused the problems. It was somehow the process of genetically engineering the potato to produce the insecticide that caused the problems. But he used the same process that I described earlier, the same process which is used to create the genetically modified crops currently on the market. And they've never been tested to the extent, to the depth that he did when he tested the potatoes on his rats. So we don't know if the soy, corn, cotton, and canola currently on the market, if they might create this potentially precancerous cell growth or immune system damage or organ damage, because they haven't been properly tested for it. So his research was extremely incriminating, and no one has bothered to reproduce it on the crops that are currently on the market.
Well, how can we tell whether or not we're getting genetically oriented created food or not? Is it marked? Is there any requirement here in the United States to let people know that this is made with recombinant genes?
Unfortunately, there are no requirements, and because there are no requirements, there is no company that voluntarily labels its products as genetically modified. You get the opposite. There are many companies that want to tell consumers that they don't use genetically modified crops, and for them, you look on the label, it'll say non-GMO or made without genetically modified soy, for example. See, the Food and Drug Administration is responsible for promoting the biotechnology industry. That's one of their goals. It's in their mandate. And because they're promoting the industry, they don't do things that might hurt the industry. And labeling might hurt the industry because 92% of Americans say they want these foods labeled, and more than 50% say that if they were labeled, they wouldn't eat them. And so the FDA has decided to ignore the will of the people, and to promote the biotech industry, they have to not allow it to be labeled. And so this administration and previous administrations continue to not respond to the overwhelming majority of people that want to have choice. So what people need to do is they have one of three choices to avoid genetically modified foods. They can buy organic food, which is not legally allowed to contain genetically modified ingredients, although sometimes there's some contamination. It's probably very small. You can buy products that say non-GMO. Or you can avoid altogether products that contain soy, corn, cotton, or canola. Cottonseed oil, by the way, we eat. And there's also three minor crops, Hawaiian papaya, and a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash. There's also Quest brand tobacco. Those are the only commercialized products that are on the market that are consumed. So what I do, for example, is if I go to a store and I want to buy tomato sauce, if I see a tomato sauce that has high fructose corn syrup or soybean oil, I put it back on the shelf, and I go to the one that has either olive oil or no oil and that doesn't have the corn products. So it does take a little change. You can go to the website truefoodnow.org, and there's a whole list of brand names that are non-GMO. But in the back of the book, you can read how to avoid eating genetically modified foods and what kind of ingredients specifically to look for on the label. And after 2 weeks, 3 weeks of checking labels and changing brand preferences, you can pretty much restock your shelves with non-genetically engineered alternatives.
That's truefoodnow.org or .com?
.org.
Truefoodnow.org. Well, let's go to Bill, who's calling in from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. at the beginning of the show, your guest was talking about the growth hormone used on cattle.
Right.
And I was wondering if he had an opinion or any knowledge of the products that they sell, like human growth hormone, as supplements for us to take to reproduce the human growth hormone in our own body. supposedly when we get into our 50s, it drops off quite a bit. And I was wondering if he had an opinion about the supplements that that are human growth hormone that are sold through the internet or health food stores.
Do you have any thought on that at all?
Well, it's a controversial topic, but I'm not. It's not my area, and so I can't give a real educated opinion.
Are those made by recombinant engineering, or those extracted from animals? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, fine, Bill. We got a definite don't know.
Well, thank you.
Okay, fine. Okay, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment on this specific subject. And of course, really, now apparently the British Medical Journal one time called for a cessation of the use of genetically modified foods, didn't they?
Yes, the entire British Medical Association called for a moratorium, and they listed, among other things, the use of antibiotic-resistant marker genes and the possibility that eating these foods might create super diseases. They also mentioned that a British group of the UK Royal Society indicated that there should be studies on eating these by pregnant mothers and infants and breastfeeding mothers and the elderly, and yet there hasn't been any studies on that either. A lot of organizations have expressed concern, although one of the leaked documents from Monsanto made it clear that their strategy was to infiltrate supposedly independent panels and to force the conclusions in favor of genetic engineering. And that's what we're seeing all over the world, in fact. I interviewed a scientist who does genetic gene therapy on humans. So he's not against genetic engineering in general, but he's very much against genetically engineering food because of the potential dangers to human health. And he happened to be on a panel committee in the UK where he was facing 11 scientists that were either appointed by the very pro-biotech UK government or appointed by the biotech industry. And he found that they were completely unaware of some basic elements of genetics and that they were just pushing through some principles that were completely wrong and that have been proven wrong already and proven wrong since in order to force conclusions that the committee would then say these foods are safe. So I can see it from the inside, and I've seen it from the outside, that a lot of these so-called independent committees are basically spiked or overloaded with people who are basically representing the industry. Now, this happened in the Food and Drug Administration. Michael Taylor, as I mentioned, is a former outside attorney to Monsanto. He was in charge of policy at the FDA back in 1992 when they declared the policy that no testing was necessary on genetically engineered foods, that the FDA didn't require anything. He even claimed that the FDA was not aware of any information showing that the foods were different. And on that basis, he just declared them as generally recognized as safe.
But that really wasn't true at all, was it?
No.
Certainly, many of the people there were very, very concerned about this.
Exactly. I mean, when we read the memos that were made public from a lawsuit, it turns out that the scientists as a whole were very concerned. They even described specifically that the process could create allergies or toxins or diseases or nutritional problems, and they urged their superiors to require long-term safety testing, but were ignored.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Angelo, who's calling us from New York. Hi, Angelo. How are you doing?
Okay, thank you. I have a question for your guest.
Right.
And I was wondering if the concentrations of these different things as we go through the food chain increase, you know, very much the way the bald eagle ingested its prey, and you know, back in the 50s and 60s, like if we would feed genetically engineered corn or livestock, you know, pigs, sheep, you know, goats, you know, cows, and we would eat the corn, the genetically engineered corn ourselves. Is the as you go higher on the food chain, and humans are right now the top of the food chain, would the concentrations increase? Are you aware of anything like this, or?
It's an excellent question. In fact, I have to hand it to you. I've just traveled around the world. I've been to 140 cities and 16 countries on 5 continents recently, and no one has ever asked me that question. But it's an excellent question. It turns out that the person in charge of the Center for Veterinary Medicine did specifically talk about the possibility of bioaccumulation in meat and milk products, for example, where animals continuing to eat genetically modified foods. They said, quote, residues of plant constituents or toxicants in milk and meat products may pose human food safety concerns. And he was completely ignored by his superiors. Now, that's a theoretical problem. It's a theoretical danger. But I want to emphasize that there has been very, very few safety studies. When I published my book last fall, there were 10 published animal feeding safety studies in peer-reviewed journals. Now there's about a dozen and a half. And a lot of them are conducted by industry. And if you look at them closely, many of them are rigged to avoid finding problems. And nonetheless, some actually show problems, even though they were designed poorly on purpose. They've shown, for example, that that rats fed genetically modified soybeans had misshapen nuclei in their liver cells. Rats fed genetically modified canola had heavier livers. Rats fed genetically modified corn had problems in the development of their blood cells and kidneys, and a whole host of other problems. But we don't know if there's a bioaccumulation. Now, we do have some anecdotal stories of, for example, a farmer in Germany that fed his cows only genetically modified corn variety, and 12 of them died mysteriously. Others got sick and had to be killed. I've spoken to several farmers out of the 25 identified so far or so in the United States who find that when they feed genetically modified corn varieties to their pigs, the pigs have trouble getting pregnant. They give birth to bags of water or have false pregnancies, or the cows have problems getting pregnant or have too many twins. Twice the number of chickens died in a feeding experiment when fed genetically modified corn. So there's a lot of anecdotal studies like that. In fact, many animals avoid eating genetically modified food when given the choice. And this I report that at the end of each chapter. I have a little page blurb about geese avoiding genetically modified soybeans or cows, pigs.
I have another question.
Sure.
We keep sheep and llamas, and we buy a lot of our grain. And I was wondering if, the animal feed would have to label if it were genetically engineered.
No, it wouldn't. So what you'd want to do is if you use corn or soy or cotton residue or canola residue, if it doesn't say that it's non-genetically engineered, you can assume that it is.
Yeah, well, most of the farmers in our area are completely opposed to any sort of growth hormone.
This is not growth hormone. You see, the thing is, the two are different. The dairy.
I understand about the corn, but I was. But the feed wouldn't have to be labeled?
No,
absolutely. There's no labeling requirements. In Europe, the feed has to be labeled, but in the United States, it doesn't. And so, if you're buying, especially, corn or soy, if you're buying that feed, you have to assume that what happens is farmers deliver their harvest to big grain elevators. They're mixed in with others. So 85% of the soybeans grown in the United States are genetically engineered. 40% of the corn is genetically engineered. So when it's mixed all together...
So it's almost a certainty that you're feeding your animals genetically engineered feed.
Right. What happens is, in order to avoid that, you have to buy probably locally from farmers where you know what they're planting. Or,
But you have to know that their seed was not genetically engineered.
Right.
And, of course, the other thing is that sometimes you get this cross-pollinization, and even if you have good seed, why can't you actually get contamination of your crops?
Absolutely. I used to work at a GMO detection laboratory. Now, these laboratories are set up specifically to test for seeds or crops to see if contamination has occurred. And it's a common thing, especially among corn, because the pollen blows great distances. There's a story of a farmer that planted blue corn in Illinois, and 3 miles away, farmers were complaining about kernels of blue showing up in their field in the same year.
Oh, sure. I see that locally. Doctor, you mentioned that the several studies on laboratory rats and whatnot, where mentioned that the science was flawed, and this was done on purpose. And if I'm correct with that, I thought you mentioned that.
Well, you're going to have to hold on. We're sort of breaking up, and we're going to have to go to a break. If you want to call back in just a couple of minutes, Angelo, we'll be glad to talk to you, okay?
Yeah, I'm losing the call anyway, and I thank you very much. I'll just turn the radio back on.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Jeffrey Smith, for a short segment. We'll wrap up this program, and then we'll be back for the next hour. I'm Mr. Smith, has agreed to be with us for 2 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a vitally important issue. You're not hearing about it. There is an organized effort, and I've been to medical meetings where, they tell us how wonderful genetically engineered corn is. All these things, it's just the radicals who object to it. Don't you believe it for a minute. You need to get this book. You need to read it. And then you need to start preparing to protect your family. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. His book is Seeds of Deception. And, of course, it asks the question, is your food safe? And I would say that food here in the United States is not safe. They do not have to label the products, whether they're genetically engineered or not, whereas in other countries they do, and people have the choice to buy or not buy genetically modified foods. Now, in Europe, when the products are labeled, are people buying the non-genetically modified or buying the genetically modified food, or are they avoiding it like the plague?
Well, actually, the manufacturers don't even let the consumers take the choice because they realize consumers would reject it. So, by and large, if something is genetically modified, it's the kiss of death. It won't be imported into Europe. So exporters from the United States have to go to laboratories, the GMO detection laboratories, to verify that it's below 0.9% contamination so that it can be avoiding a label that says contains GMOs in Europe. Because if it does contain GMOs, people don't want it.
And I know certainly in Africa, a lot of the African people, even in areas where there really is famine, why they don't want our genetically modified food. I think they got a lot better judgment than the average American does. In fact, I think maybe the geese are a lot smarter than the average American.
Yeah, we seem to have to get humans at the level of animals. Now, the last caller asked a question about rigged research. There, a lot of the research that's done by industry in the last 20 years has a strong bias in favor of the industry. What a surprise. And you can look at that, and a lot of people have analyzed the public research of the genetically engineered crops and feeding studies and found that it was clearly designed to avoid finding problems. I'll give you some examples. In a Monsanto feeding study, they diluted their genetically modified soy 10 to 1 or even 12 to 1 before feeding it to animals. They fed it to mature animals instead of young growing ones. They never weighed the organs or did some sophisticated analyses. In fact, they left out some of the most incriminating evidence that was later discovered in the archives of the journal, showing a dramatic increase in the allergen trypsin inhibitor in their genetically modified soy, as well as an increase of a potential anti-nutrient. Other studies of the milk products, they pasteurized the milk 120 times longer than normal. Another group heated their corn 4.5 times longer. Another Monsanto study, they added 1,250 times the amount of a digestive enzyme to try and break down a protein very quickly. All sorts of ways in which, if you look at the details of it, and I report this in my book, and it's kind of actually some of the fun stuff to show how they've tried to set up the situation so there would be no possible problem. It's amazing that even though they go to all these extremes to
Hold that stuff right there, Jeffrey, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out across America, and specifically up in the Great Northwest that will soon be leaving us, that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you believe you're going to get things here, you're not going to get elsewhere. If you believe there are real problems out there, if you believe, as I do, that there is a spiritual component to almost everything going on today, we'd hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours a day on radio and 5 hours a day on the Internet and 5 hours a day on satellite and 4 hours a day on shortwave. But it's believe me, it's a pretty expensive proposition. But with the support so far, we've been able to make it, although Donations are down somewhat, and so if you, at the end of the year, are interested in helping us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'd appreciate your pledge, your support. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there certainly want to get a copy of this book. It's called Seeds of Deception. It's written by our author, Jeffrey Smith. It's a fascinating read. It's an easy read, but it's got so much information. And you need to get this information and help us disseminate that. The American people are being lied to. As I mentioned, I've gone to the medical meetings. And they will show us this little scrawny ear of corn, Mexican corn. And then they say, now look at this beautiful ear of corn. It's genetically modified. Well, that scrawny ear of corn, I never saw one that looked like that long before genetic engineering. But you see, they're playing games with our minds. And they're trying to make you think that all nice looking corn, you know, has to be genetically engineered, and of course it's really not true at all. What they're doing is introducing things into our diet which have the potential for terrible hazards, and as they pointed out, certainly with the recombinant bovine growth hormone that you know, has this IGF-1 hormone in it. And here you get a 7 times increase in breast carcinoma and 4 times increase in prostate carcinoma in animals. And yet, of course, they're in almost all of your milk today. And the companies that want to say, we do not use recombinant bovine growth hormone, we don't use our BGF. Why? They have to write, but there's no difference in the milk, you know. We don't use it, but there's no difference in the milk, according to the FDA. And the FDA, say what you will, they're frankly lying. You need to get this book, you need to read it, along with so many of the other things we've talked to you about on fluoride and aspartame and mercury and other means by which the public is being damaged. And certainly, Jeffrey was talking about how certainly these products interfere with pregnancy. Well, almost all the other products interfere with pregnancy as well. I think that they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. If you'd like to get the items we talked about, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to getting some of those videos we've been talking about. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour versions of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We think this is very important, not only for us old folks, but for our youngsters, too, who are swept up in the music culture, and they think it's loads of fun, and funny lyrics and funny gyrations, but they do not understand the spiritual dimension of which we've engaged. And then, of course, we carry a Megiddo 1 video, Megiddo 2. Megiddo 1 deals with the coming Third World War. Megiddo 2 deals with the overview of what's happening from a spiritual point of view and going into some of the secret occult organizations, like, of course, Theosophy and Rosicrucianism. And there's a small segment in there that I do. We take you to see the Georgia Guidestones, which are dedicated to the Age of Reason, which probably doesn't mean much to most people, but I recognize it immediately. The Age of Reason was a book that was written over 200 years ago by Thomas Paine. And when you read that book and then you begin to contemplate what's going on today, you begin to see the continuity of the forces of darkness. Anyway, again, our number 1-800-544-8927. And please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mr. Jeffrey Smith. We're talking about his book, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. And, of course, the first hour, we've simply talked about the background of these various products, which are genetically engineered, which have been released upon the public. And, of course, in the process of doing this, they are creating new genes that will create new types of proteins that we don't know what the long-term effect of it. But certainly in many of the animal studies, there's a very serious question that these animals are certainly not entirely healthy. And, of course, as far as the recombinant bovine growth hormone is concerned, it releases a hormone into the milk with that that increases the incidence of breast carcinoma and prostate cancer. Was that in rats, or what was the study done in?
Well, there's plenty of studies in human beings that show that the hormone called IGF-1 is associated with cancer. That premenopausal women below the age of 50 with high levels of IGF-1 are 7 times more likely to develop breast cancer. Men are 4 times more likely to develop prostate cancer. And we do know that milk contains IGF-1 anyway, but we also know that milk from cows treated with RBGH have much higher levels of this IGF-1 hormone.
All right, fine. So this then was not specifically done with the IGF-1 hormone, but it was. We know that this produces cancer, and this is actually going to produce higher levels of this hormone, right?
Right. So I can't connect the dots legally and say that the milk from cows treated creates cancer, but I can say that the milk from cows treated creates an increase in the hormone, and that by drinking milk in general, milk drinkers increase the level of hormone in their bodies. And people with high levels of the hormone have a higher tendency to have cancer.
Well, you know, the cancer, especially cancer of the prostate, is just endemic in males today. And, you know, you're just thinking people 30 years old are getting elevated PSA tests, and they're getting prostate biopsies, and there may be one or two cells there. And, of course, the next thing, why are they on the way to the radiation or prostatectomy? And, of course, really, we're seeing such a marked increase in breast carcinoma and prostate carcinoma in America. Everybody shakes their head and says, "Oh, shucks, we don't know why it's happening. We're going to have to study it a little bit more." And you're suggesting it's been known for a long time that there were products enough that actually did that. And, you know, as a physician and going to medical meetings not infrequently, I have never heard that subject addressed.
The thing is, a lot of this information is not circulated among the medical community. I will be speaking. I've spoken at the American Public Health Association, and I'll be speaking at other medical colleges and meetings soon to sort of inform them what's going on.
Well, I'm glad you're going to be out there trying to get them educated, because the doctors are good people. I don't never met a doctor. I think that everybody wanted to hurt anybody, but if they don't know what they're doing, if they're not getting the material, and if there's an organized effort, especially on the part of these multi-billion-dollar corporations, to suppress the truth, then no man's family or future or freedom or food are really safe. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. Jeffrey Smith. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. And now, of course, what do we know at all about canola oil? Certainly they're planting an awful lot of canola, this genetically modified canola. And it's not only here in the United States. Aren't they planting it in other countries here in the Western Hemisphere as well?
That's right, also over in Europe. Canola is an interesting thing. Canola, like perhaps 70-75% of the canola is genetically engineered not to die when sprayed with an herbicide. They take genes from a bacterium and stick it into their DNA. Now, it turns out that canola cross-pollinates quite readily. And so it cross-pollinates with relatives that are weeds. So now some of the weeds have the gene which causes the weeds not to die when sprayed with weed killer. So it's creating super weeds, which means now the farmers, in order to kill the weeds, have to use even more poisonous weed killers. But even if you plant genetically modified canola in 1 year, and then you plant non-genetically modified canola in the following years, you'll still get contamination from the previous year, because there's a lot of these tiny seeds get dropped into the soil at the time of harvest. And so one study showed that if you planted non-genetically modified canola for the next 16 years, you'd still have a contamination level of over 1% because of this ability for what is called volunteer crops to grow year after year and contaminate. Now, canola originally came from, it's an oilseed rape, but what they did is they exposed it to radiation. They caused mutations because the original plant was toxic. It had something called urucic acid in high content, and it would be deadly. And so they exposed it to radiation and came up with a mutation that had a lower level of this urucic acid. And so many people think that it's still dangerous, whether or not it's genetically modified. But then you take that and you genetically modify it, and whatever risk you had before, you're increasing it dramatically. So there's many, many people that try and avoid canola oil for these potential dangers.
Well, now, what is canola oil used for?
Well, it's used for cooking. Canola is actually a marketing name. It's Canadian oil. It's actually called oilseed rape. But it was when they changed it through this process called mutagenesis or exposure to X-rays, and they came up with this other version, they decided to market it as canola oil. They use it a lot in baking. They use it a lot. If you go up to Canada and you go to a restaurant, typically they use canola oil in the restaurant. So I have, you know, it's a little hard for me to eat in restaurants in Canada if I'm trying to avoid eating genetically modified oil.
All right, fine. Now, of course, cottonseed oil would be pretty much the same thing.
Cotton actually has an additional problem in that...
Hold that thought right there. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening, Jeffrey Smith. He's the author of the book Seeds of Deception, and we're talking about, of course, first canola oil, and of course, canola oil is used extensively in cooking, especially up in Canada, and then we begin to talk about cottonseed oil, which is another genetically modified crop, because, of course, I assume it's some sort of herbicide or pesticide resistance, but then, of course, it's passed over, a genetic modification is passed over into the oil, the cottonseed oil. So pick up the story there.
Well, cotton, unfortunately, is not regulated like a food product, even though we eat cottonseed oil and animals eat the residue. And so it's sprayed with a lot of chemicals. It's one of the most chemical-intensive agriculture products in the world. And so it's very likely that the residues exist in not only the cottonseed oil, but also in the animal feed, which can, of course, then be eaten by humans or taken by the milk or the dairy products. So there's a huge controversy around cottonseed oil and cottonseed products just to start. But then when you add this genetic modification to it, again, you increase the risks dramatically. Cotton is genetically engineered to produce its own pesticide, and so now you have a pesticide that's being created by the cotton, just like you have a pesticide that's being created by corn. Now, if you ask the EPA, which is in charge of these pesticide-laden plants, what do they think of it, they say, well, it's all destroyed during digestion, so it doesn't matter. It turns out there's plenty of evidence to show that that's not the case. When they fed this pesticide to mice, the mice developed an immune response equal to cholera toxin. They developed an increased susceptibility to allergies. they developed abnormal and excessive cell growth in the small intestine. Human farm workers were exposed to this BT, developed skin response, and their blood showed an antibody response indicating a possible allergy. And more recently, Filipinos living next to a cornfield that produced its own BT pesticide from a genetically modified corn developed skin, respiratory, and intestinal reactions and fever while the corn was pollinating, while they were breathing in the pollen. And this happened 2 years in a row, and also these individuals, when they had their blood tests, found that they had some kind of immune response to BT as well. So we're eating this pesticide in the corn we eat, and not only that, but we now know since genes that from genetically modified food can transfer to gut bacteria, and that was discovered and published earlier this year, it's possible that this gene which creates a pesticide that's inside the corn could also jump to gut bacteria and end up inside the DNA of gut bacteria, which means it could turn our intestinal flora, our bacteria, into living pesticide factories, which is not a sober, it's a sobering thought, but it's absolutely scientifically supported by what we know about the from the genetically engineered tests.
Well, now, of course, you know, as far as the this whole process is concerned, you know, where is it all going to end? Certainly, we find that we you know, are ingesting this sort of thing. We're eating this ourselves, and your contention is it is having an impact on the human body. But of course, there's no way of measuring it at the present time. There've never been any controlled studies.
That's right. It was released. I mean, we know for we can only look at anecdotal studies. We know, as I mentioned, that the incidence of soy allergies skyrocketed by 50% after genetically modified soy was introduced to the UK. According to the Center for Disease Control in the United States, between 1994 and 2001, when a lot of these genetically modified crops were introduced into the human diet, that food-related illnesses in the United States doubled. We know that scientists in Russia claim that soon after genetically modified food was introduced there, over 3 years, allergies tripled. So we look at broad numbers, but since no one's doing actual research to indicate whether there is a greater allergy susceptibility to genetically modified crops versus the natural crops, we don't know.
Well, how long have they been using genetically modified foods in Russia? Because, you know, the average age of the average male has dropped from about 65 down to 58 or 59. The Russian male population is dying off. How long have they had genetically modified food over there? Do we have any idea?
My understanding is not very long, because according to this press release that was put out in December of last year, the scientist was claiming that there was a tripling over the previous 3 years, which corresponded to when a lot of genetically modified foods were introduced there. So
this has been going on a lot longer than that. It's been going on probably close to a decade. So that we can't necessarily attribute it to genetically modified food, although I suspect there's some sort of another experiment going on over there, but I have no idea what it is. But it's really one of the most dramatic drops in, you know, in the a first world country dropping, you know, the age of longevity from 65 to 58 is a rather dramatic thing.
Absolutely.
Well, now, of course, as you talk to people across the country about this, is there a great deal of concern on the part of the average person about the danger of genetically engineered food?
Well, the average person is pretty much uninformed. The more than 50% of Americans have said they've never eaten a genetically modified food in their lives, even though they eat them in every meal, or almost every meal. So when I speak with people, when I give talks, there's profound reaction. There's enormous emotion that gets stirred. People, and I get emails from people who've read Seeds of Deception, and they send me an email and say, I've just finished your book, and I've gone through everything, in every food item in my shelves, and I've called my sons and daughters and tell them not to serve it to their kids. You know, there's a tremendous amount of energy once people learn about it. And this is typical, because studies show that the more people learn about genetically modified foods, the less they trust them. So my job is to get the word out. But the major press in the United States has bought into the biotech mythology. I have a chapter in the book called Muscling the Media. And there's some very interesting stories in there, how stories that were going to be reported by the media got stopped by threats from Monsanto's attorney, or perceived threats of lawsuits, and that there's a tremendous bias even in the major U.S. papers in favor of genetic engineering.
All right. Well, now, of course, you know, when we see an ear of corn today, 20 years ago, we used to see an occasional worm. We don't see worms in our corn today. Is that because of the genetic engineering?
Probably not. Only 3 to 5% of the corn on the cob is genetically engineered. About 40% of the corn harvest in the U.S. is genetically engineered, but that primarily goes either to animal feed or into the derivatives of corn, like high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, dextrose, citric acid, things like that. So the change in the corn of the cob would not be tracked generally to genetic modification.
All right, but they obviously they must then control it with spraying or something of the sort, because you certainly don't see the worms there. And it's I will tell you that the corn we get is just delicious. You know, it's much sweeter than it has been in the past. And I'm sure this is, you know, the normal husbandry, the normal means of improving the quality of the crops, which you can do without genetically engineering. But when you're genetically engineering, why, you're just blasting these molecules in, you know, into the DNA, and you don't know where it's going to go, and you don't know what the result is going to be. That's what's so frightening. And yet, of course, nothing is being done to protect the long-term health of the American people. Now, one of the things you talk about, a tobacco mosaic virus. Is that a cancer virus that's used as a carrier? And where does that fit into this whole story?
Well, it's a cauliflower mosaic virus. And that they take a piece of this virus, which they call a promoter, and that goes in with the gene to turn the gene on. And there's a lot of potential dangers with this promoter. It can turn on other genes inside the corn or inside the plant at random, causing an overproduction potentially of allergies or toxins or carcinogens or anti-nutrients. It might cause recombination and mutations and instability inside the DNA. And it also might awaken dormant viruses in the DNA. You see, inside the DNA of higher organisms, there's ancient viruses that have been embedded there. Many are broken down and degraded, but some are intact but simply not turned on. Since research has shown that this promoter, this cauliflower mosaic virus promoter, can turn on genes at random, permanently, it's also possible that it can awaken dormant viruses that have been embedded within the DNA, but not just within the plants, because the promoter has also been found to transfer to gut bacteria inside human beings, and an unpublished study recently announced showed that it transferred to the organs of rats after a single meal. So there are some scientists that believe that this promoter could be the worst, absolute worst aspect of genetic engineering, that it could actually awaken viruses, cause genetic instability inside our own DNA, cause potential overproduction of carcinogens or growth factors. It's like a wild card that we're putting into our food and the food of the entire population.
Well, now, do we have any idea, you know, whether there is any carcinogenic? You talk about carcinogens. You know, is there any, has anybody done animal studies to find that there's an increased incidence of cancer in animals fed the genetically modified foods?
There hasn't been a lot of studies. You see, what happens with cancer studies is you need a lot of long-term feeding trials. There hasn't been a lot of those. One study showed excessive cell growth in the stomach and in the intestines. Now, that is a potential precursor to cancer, although the rats in the study did not end up with tumors. It does not mean that it's not possible. It doesn't mean it is possible. It just means it's very interesting that there was some kind of excessive cell growth, and it was dramatic. I've seen the slides. It looks like double the length of these cells inside the stomach and inside the intestine.
Well, of course, I think we're really playing with fire, and I think that people really are going to have to start watching their food. You can't trust the government to protect you. I think that would be the big message that you will hear from so many of our programs. You're going to have to start learning about what it is, what's in your food, what's in your medicines, and learn, of course, because you take one medicine, and then you got to take another medicine to counter the effects of that. Now, first medicine you're taking, and then you got to take another medicine to counter effect of the other two, and sometimes we just create more and more and more problems. So, and then, of course, we get over to the genetic modified food. And, of course, this is the very substance of our diet. And we got real problems. If you don't understand what this is all about, well, you're endangering your family's life. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, well, I would love to hear from you, and I'm sure Jeffrey would as well. And, of course, one of the things that he points out in his book is that very often the animals will not eat this genetically modified food, the geese, the rats. Sometimes don't they actually have to force feed these rats to get them to eat the modified foods?
It's a good question. In fact, there was the animal feeding study that was used for the very first approved genetically modified crop, the Flavor Saver tomato. They tried to feed the rats the tomato, but the rats refused to eat them. And the CEO of Calgene, the maker of the tomato, said, "You could be Chef Boyardee, but these rats are not going to eat the tomato." So they fed them with feeding tubes and stomach washes. Now, this company was the first company to send its materials to the FDA for evaluation. Now, the FDA has a voluntary evaluation. It's not mandatory. And this Calgene company was the only one that actually sent raw data from feeding studies that were long-term feeding studies and gave it to the FDA in detail. And it turns out that several of these rats developed lesions of the stomach. They had bleeding stomachs. 7 out of 40 died within 2 weeks and were replaced in the study. And the FDA scientists, based on memos that were released based on a lawsuit, had made comments like there's outstanding questions of safety that haven't been answered, like the data does not show a reasonable certainty of no harm, which is the standard we need to reach. And in spite of their concerns and in spite of the unanswered questions, the top people at the FDA, the political appointees, approved the tomato. Now, if you look at the research, they only looked at the stomach. They never looked at the small intestines. They never looked at the large intestines. There was dozens and dozens of things that they didn't look at. And the one thing that they did look at, they found unexplained bleeding stomachs. Now, one scientist says this could be deadly if the same kind of thing happens in human beings who have particular conditions. Now, this particular tomato is no longer on the market. There are no more genetically modified tomatoes being marketed. They were taken off the market for marketing purposes, not supposedly for health purposes. But it gives you an idea of the kind of lax review that was going on at the FDA. In fact, since then, if a company wants to introduce a genetically modified crop, they can give 10 pages of summary data, and they can give anything they want, but then if the FDA asks them for further information, they can simply ignore the FDA, because the FDA has only voluntary guidelines.
Sounds like we have some of the finest bureaucrats that money could buy there at the FDA. Well, of course, I was reading, of course, you told the story about the farmer who liked to feed the squirrels in the wintertime, and of course he decided that he would do an experiment with regular corn on the cob and then with a BT corn on the cob just to find out what the squirrels would do. You want to cover that?
Sure. What happened was every year in Iowa, I'm in Iowa right now, that's where I live, I'd feed the squirrels, putting whole cobs up there on the tree. And he put in one tree the BT corn, which is the genetically modified, which creates its own pesticide. The other one was the natural corn. He noticed that the squirrels would only eat the natural corn. So what he decided to do is to say, okay, what happens if I don't put any natural corn out there? Now, this was the 10 coldest days in the winter in Iowa, and I'm telling you, it gets cold here. And only on the very 10th day was there a little nibble on a small portion of the ear.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Jeffrey Smith. His book, Seeds of Deception and Going into Exposing Industry and Government Lies about the Safety of Genetically Engineered Food. He's telling the story about this Iowa farmer who fed the squirrels in the wintertime, and he decided one time to, of course, to take some BT corn, biologically modified corn, and actually give it two areas, one with biologically modified corn, BT corn, and then, of course, the regular corn, and the squirrels would eat the regular corn. They wouldn't touch the biologically altered, and so eventually then, of course, he took away the regular corn, so all they had was the biologically grown corn, pardon me, the changed corn, genetically modified corn. So pick up the story from there.
Well, He said he felt sorry for the squirrels because they weren't eating it. It was the coldest part of winter. So then he put back the natural corn on the other tree, and that was immediately gone. So it showed that the squirrels had an absolute preference. And this is, as I say, it's not just squirrels. I mean, there's one farmer put genetically modified corn on one side of his trough and non-genetically modified corn on another, and he had his cows come in, and they all huddled around one side. They only ate the natural corn. In fact, when they finished that, they went over to the other one and just walked away. And they said this is completely unlike animals to walk, for cows to walk away from grain. He also tells the story of a dairy. The dairy had put in corn into these bins in various layers, and every once in a while the cows would stop eating as much corn. They'd have to reduce. They reduce their amount of corn that they eat. It turns out that was when the genetically modified corn was reached that level of the bin. They had to eat something, but they ate less of it. And so when given a choice, they wouldn't eat it at all. When given no choice, they ate less of it.
And you had one instance here where chickens were fed the genetically modified corn, and actually twice as many of them died as ordinarily. Wasn't that the case?
That's right. That's right. And there was a feeding study, a commercial feeding study, and twice the number of chickens that ate the genetically modified variety died without explanation.
All right. Well, I think that these are really all very, very legitimate questions that must be addressed, and you're never going to see them addressed in the what I refer to as the controlled media. That's why I do what I do 5 hours a day. And let's go right now. We've got John calling in from New Jersey. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi there, Dr. Stan. I have a question for Mr. Smith. You were saying that IGF is normally found in cow's milk anyhow. I like to drink goat's milk. Is IGF normally found in goat's milk?
I actually don't know if IGF-1 is. It's a good question.
Okay, well, that was my question.
All right, and I don't know the answer.
No, I do know, John, that Dr. Blaylock brings this out in his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, the deleterious effects of drinking milk as an adult. So we're probably better off to cut back as much as we possibly can on drinking milk, and especially if it's got the, this recombinant growth hormone in it. Why, this, I think, is a real red flag.
There's no RBGH that we know of that's used in goats or sheep. We only understand that it's at this point used for cows. So that's one less risk of the other types of animals.
And of course, is that what about increases the milk production about 10%?
10 to 15 is what the
okay, fine.
Says, yeah.
Okay, anything else, John?
Nope, that's it. Thanks very much.
All right, fine. Thanks so much. And that was John calling in from New Jersey. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we're talking about genetically modified foods. Now, have there been any congressional hearings to try to get to the bottom of this and to try to force FDA to act responsibly and protect the American people?
Well, there were congressional investigations in the FDA several times, not so much about the crops. More about the milk, a couple points. The General Accounting Office, which acts like an investigator for the executive branch, they investigated twice. One time their investigation was completely stopped because Monsanto simply refused to give them the information that they asked for. Another time, a congressman who had received a letter, an anonymous letter from whistleblowers at the FDA who had survived the purge from other whistleblowers, some had been fired, stripped of responsibilities, or forced out. These remaining whistleblowers wanted to keep their job, and they wrote a letter which prompted an investigation, but it did not turn up with satisfactory smoking guns, and so the RBGH did end up on the market.
I think really what's so amazing is that there are many, many people there who work at the FDA who know what's going on and are concerned, but they don't want to risk their jobs, they don't want to risk their pensions, their family's future, and so they, but at least they're getting the information out. So do you get some information from whistleblowers as well?
Yes. From time to time I run into a whistleblower, and it's very exciting. I understand about, from a friend of mine who's done a research on the FDA, he describes three different types of people, which I'll tell you about after the break.
Okay. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeffrey Smith, and we're talking about his book, Seeds of Deception. If you haven't got the book, why it is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. This is a great book. It's got great information in it you're just not going to get elsewhere. We were just talking to Jeffrey about the whistleblowers. That actually there are people working within the government who want to get the truth out, but they don't dare come out publicly like David Graham did recently. Dr. David Graham blew the whistle on the FDA, pointing out that they had known of the danger of Vioxx going back to the year 2000, somewhere between 88,000 and 138,000 Americans are going to die because of the FDA's policy just on Vioxx alone. And how, there are many of the other the drugs that are there. They're very, very questionable. And, of course, he was immediately punished. He was removed from his job, his research job. His career in the government is through forever. Why? Because he wanted to tell the truth, and he wanted to protect the American people. And where is the outcry? Where are the demands that the leadership of the FDA be fired and we get responsible people in? Well, there is no demand because the American people seem to be totally indifferent to the very real threat, which I feel that threatens not only their lives, but the lives of their family and generations yet unborn. Well, Jeff was talking about three types of people who work in the government. Go ahead.
Well, this one's from James Turner, who is the best-selling author of The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on the Food and Drug Administration. He describes a three-tiered structure there. At the top, he describes political appointees that are not necessarily bound by science. And so that would be the people like Michael Taylor, who was former outside attorney to Monsanto, then came in and set the policy on genetically modified crops, and then went back and became Monsanto's vice president. Then he talks about some of the very, very competent scientists. He said some of the most competent scientists he's met in his career. He says many of those are often hired away by universities, nonprofit groups, and other public health agencies. And then it leaves a less dedicated and less competent residue of people not highly sought after outside of government. Now, that may have been the type of person that was described by Richard Kraut in a testimony in April 1976. He was a former director of the FDA's Bureau of Drugs. He says, quote, I want to describe the agency as I saw it. No one knew where anything was. There was absenteeism. There was open drunkenness by several employees, which went on for months. There was intimidation internally. People, I'm talking about division directors and their staffs, would engage in a kind of behavior that invited insubordination. People tittered in the corners, throwing spitballs. Now I'm describing physicians. People would slouch down in their chairs and not respond to questions and moan and groan with sleeping gestures. There is a kind of behavior I have not seen in any other institution from a grown man.
Hold that thought. Well, Jeffrey is just talking about what somebody had written about, the type of activities there at the FDA, throwing spitballs, people slouched in their chairs, nobody really especially taking on a position of leadership, many of the high officials taking positions which would lead to insubordination, for which they did absolutely nothing. It sounds in many respects like a totally chaotic government bureaucracy. Would that be a fair statement to make?
Well, according to this, it is.
Man, who were you actually quoting?
According to Richard Kraut, former director of the FDA's Bureau of Drugs, in his testimony in April 1976. And he finishes by saying the FDA has had a long-term problem with the recruitment of personnel, good scientific personnel. Now, what happened, it got a little worse later on. In 1980, when Reagan came in, he began an assault on regulation. And what happened is, he gave the Office of Management and Budget the power to make sweeping changes in all federal agencies. And so this changed everything. According to a veterinarian who was actually fired when he was critical of RBGH, recombinant bovine growth hormone, he said, there seemed to be a trend in place toward approval at any price. It went from a university-like setting where the independent scientific review to an atmosphere of approve, approve, approve. He said the thinking is, how many things can we approve this year? So this was getting revved up by the time that the genetically modified drugs and the genetically modified crops came in. So basically, as Graham talked about tonight on CNBC and in his previous testimonies, the FDA considers their client the industry. And they look to approve products for the industry and look to promote the industry. In fact, promoting biotechnology industry is in the mandate of the Food and Drug Administration. And so they've completely risked the health of the public by approving these foods and crops without adequate testing. Now, you, if you think you're talking about numbers about that might die from Vioxx, they're huge, 84,000 to 100-something thousand. But we're talking about food that's being fed to everyone in the United States, food that can be creating long-term problems, food that can change the health statistics of this entire generation, and food that's in crops that will self-propagate. It's pollution with legs. It can travel. It can propagate. Once you release these genetically modified crops into the environment, you cannot fully recall them with the current technologies. They want to introduce genetically modified salmon, which could escape into the ocean, which would be unrecallable. They want to introduce genetically modified insects. They've already found that they completely can't control the genetically modified contamination of these cross-pollinating species like corn and canola. So what we're facing now is because the FDA and the U.S. government have abdicated their responsibility, they're putting the entire generation and future generations at risk from genetically modified foods and crops.
In other words, the Pandora's out of the box, the genie's out of the bottle, and nobody seems to care.
Exactly. Now, we have to move pretty quickly. It's not something we can hang around with, because the thing is, it's like in a triage. When you have to deal with the most difficult, most dangerous things first, genetic engineering is certainly at the top of the list.
Well, now, of course, these seeds, that means you don't have to necessarily spray, or you can spray with Roundup and you don't have to worry about it. And then, of course, these genes that produce a pesticide, what are they actually going to kill? Is it worms, or what are they going to kill?
Aphids, nematodes. In fact, you're starting to ask questions about the agriculture side, which is the focus of my next year's research.
All right, fine. Well, we'll have to get in touch with you next year and get that information. But basically what we're doing is a mass experimentation on the American people. Would that be a fair thing to say?
I would say it's an uncontrolled experiment. You see, in an experiment, you usually have a control, and you have an experimental group, and you monitor the results. What we have here is an unmonitored and uncontrolled experiment. And so we are being used as guinea pigs. Now, there was an interesting thing that happened in the UK. The Food Standards Agency there, which is like the Food and Drug Administration here, only deals only with food over at the UK, they wanted to evaluate the effects of genetically modified foods on the population. So they asked the executives of the supermarket chains for the loyalty card data, which means, you know, it's like the supermarket discount cards. They knew the purchasing power of millions of people in the UK, and so they said they wanted to look at that and compare it to the medical records to see if those eating genetically modified food had higher incidences of cancer, childhood allergies, or birth defects. So this is the kind of experiment they're doing. Now, when this was leaked to the public, the embarrassed UK government, who had promised that the foods were safe, said, we're not going to do the experiment. So we don't even have that going on.
Well, but are they still, does the UK allow the genetically modified foods or not? The people just won't buy it.
They allow it. In fact, Tony Blair is very pro-biotech. In spite of the fact that the vast majority of the British people do not want to eat it, he's still trying to push it on them. And so there was leaked documents how the ministers were trying to trash a scientist that had blown the whistle and then got fired. I report about that, how they had a meeting and they were going to plan to set up these supposedly independent scientists for interviews, and they had a whole marketing program designed to try and convince the public that genetically modified foods were good. In fact, there was one group that did an entire year called the GM Nation debate. They had hundreds of debates and open forums in hopes, and some of the industry was hoping that would increase the acceptance. It turns out at the end of these debates, about 2% of the people who heard the results had something good to say about genetically modified foods. The vast majority completely rejected it. And yet the Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has been pushing it on the people in spite of that. And many people think he's in the pockets of the industry or of the United States, which is in turn pushing him to do the same.
Well, unfortunately, we do have politicians that do have another agenda and don't really represent either the best interests of the people or, certainly they really aren't concerned about the potential for damage that's coming from this. Now, as far as the genetically modified food, are there a whole flock of new ones coming down the line?
Well, there's a whole flock waiting. You see, virtually all of the produce in your supermarket has a genetically modified component at some stage of development. Now, there was plans, according to Arthur Anderson, the consultant for Monsanto early on, they spoke actually at a conference and said that they asked Monsanto's executives to describe their ideal future in 15 to 20 years, and the executives described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically modified and patented. And then a few speakers later, another biotech representative projected a chart on the wall showing that they projected a 95% takeover of commercialized seeds within 5 years. And that was back in 1999. And so it hasn't happened. There's only four major crops. And the reason it hasn't happened is because the consumers around the world have said no, particularly overseas where there's more education, more media coverage about the health dangers. So Monsanto was pushing hard to introduce genetically modified wheat, and on May 11th of this year, put out a press release saying that they had decided not to pursue it because of the resistance by consumers and by industry. So it's a very good sign. The industry is sort of crumbling a little. We're winning the battle, but it's a fiercely pitched battle on many fronts all over the world. But there's efforts to try and introduce genetically modified alfalfa next year. People want to introduce genetically modified rice and strawberries and lettuce, and in the near future and virtually all the other crops after that. So there's a lot of people working against that. People can sign up for my newsletter, electronic newsletter at seedsofdeception.com, to be informed of these kind of things and how people can help.
Well, do you have a telephone number you'd like to get out, or just your website? Seedsofdeception.com.
Seedsofdeception.com will be the way to go for people to sign up for the newsletter and to read more information, learn how to avoid eating genetically modified foods.
All right, seedsofdeception.com, and all right, fine. What would they get? In other words, is this a monthly newsletter, bi-monthly newsletter?
Yes, I've got a syndicated column which comes out every month. It's called Spilling the Beans. It comes out at the beginning of each month, and you can go on the site right now and look at some previous months. I started doing it regularly back in August. I summarize a lot of the health dangers. I summarize some of the current events. It's not really a news thing, it's more of a full column going in depth on certain aspects of genetic engineering, and it's completely free, and we don't use the emails for anything else.
All right, fine. Well, I really think it's so vitally important that people understand the potential danger of this, and you know, as you begin taking these fragments of genes from one species and begin putting them into another, and then of course you can begin inspecting your own bacteria in your gut. Have we found any deleterious effects from actually infecting the gut bacteria with these modified types of organisms?
Well, there was only one study that verified that the gut bacteria was actually picking up the genetically modified genes. In this case, it was a soybean. Soybeans are genetically engineered to not die when sprayed with Roundup, so they're called Roundup Ready or herbicide tolerant. So it turns out now the gut bacteria inside human beings can be herbicide tolerant because it now has this gene in there. But it was the study was funded by the probiotech UK government. And if you read the study, these guys stretch logic incredibly by trying to say that because they couldn't find any intact genetically modified DNA in the feces of humans, that everyone's okay. I mean, it's completely ridiculous because the transfer already takes place inside the body. Just because it doesn't survive the whole way through the digestion, it means nothing. And they've never found it in my travels in 16 countries, in 5 continents in the last 15 months, I haven't found any scientist willing to defend what these people in the paper said. So they did not follow up. They never looked for long-term health problems with this infection, so to speak, of the genes from the genetically modified food transferring to gut bacteria. They never looked to see if the pesticide-creating gene transferred, which converts our bacteria into living pesticide factories. They never looked to see if the antibiotic-resistant marker genes, which are used in most GM foods, transferred and could possibly create super diseases that will resist antibiotics. It was amazing what they left behind and just walked away smugly saying, oh, we're confident that it's safe. And scientists around the world, when they realize the potential dangers of this gene transfer, they're outraged that more research hasn't been done.
Well, now, what can the average person do here listening to this program? How are we going to, in the process of, our diet, avoid genetically modified foods?
Well, the key is either buy organic food, buy products that say non-GMO, or read the labels and avoid the genetically modified crops. I describe them in my book. I'll say them briefly now. There's soy, corn, cotton, canola, Hawaiian papaya, a little bit of zucchini, a little bit of crookneck squash. And if you don't have something that says non-GMO, but it has, for example, high fructose corn syrup in it, you know that corn syrup is from genetically modified corn. If something has soy lecithin, if something has soy protein isolate, or dextrose or maltodextrin, these come from either soy or corn. So soy from the soy protein isolate, corn for the others. So one of the key problems is the fact that soy, corn, cotton, and canola are all used in vegetable oil. So like when I go out to eat to a restaurant, I ask, what do you use? Do you use olive oil or do you use vegetable oil? If they use vegetable oil, I get something that's not cooked in oil, or I get them to cook special for me. That way I can avoid eating genetically modified foods when I go out. Most produce, the stuff that we stir fry, is very rarely genetically engineered. You got a little bit of zucchini, a little bit of crookneck squash, very small percentage of the sweet corn, and that's it. If you take tofu, well, that has to be non-GMO because it's made from soy. So these are some of the details that you get when you start realizing that we need to take more control over our food.
And I think the major thing is to be forewarned and realize there's a problem and then start looking and thinking along these lines.
Absolutely.
And, of course, here where I live in Santa Cruz, a lot of people are very much into food and food fatism, and I used to sort of snicker at them, and now I'm looking at them and saying, those are pretty smart people. I really think that we're really responsible for our health and the health of our family. And the only way that we're going, of course, to maintain our health is certainly to be aware of that these bizarre things are going on. And the way that they actually create this genetic engineering, it sounds to me like sort of a, it's not really engineering at all. It's sort of a hit and miss way that they introduce these genes into the DNA helix, isn't it?
Yes, in fact, many of the basic technology is based on science that's 40 years old and obsolete. Many of the basic assumptions that are used for safety claims have been overturned. The whole concept that one gene produces one protein was overturned, and still that's the basis of genetic engineering. So much of it is old world and replaced, and yet we're still feeding the products of this infant science to millions of people and releasing them into the environment where they can never be recalled. I'm not against research on DNA. I'm not against the technology of genetic engineering for seeing what it can produce. But keeping it in the laboratory at this point, not putting it into food, and certainly not putting it into the environment. Right now, it's basically politically and economically motivated. In fact, it was the Bush 1 administration with Dan Quayle in charge of the Council of Competitiveness trying to shore up U.S. exports that identified genetically modified crops as a potential source of increased U.S. revenue. And so they pushed these onto the market without testing. They pushed them onto other countries, and it's been an economic disaster. There's $2 to $3 billion extra in subsidies having to be spent on these crops because of the rejection and closed markets. Corn growers in the United States have lost $300 million European market happen each year. So it goes on and on, and yet the U.S. is just doggedly towing the line of the biotech industry, and there's no real support for it in the food industry. There's no real support for it in science and in the people that, the independent scientists. It's basically economics and politics driven.
Well, let's go to Jeanette, who's calling in from Watsonville. Hi, Jeanette. How are you doing?
Hi, fine. Thank you. I might have missed, I did miss this if you talked about it, but is soy milk okay?
Most soy milk in this country is free of GMOs, or it says non-GMO.
Uh-huh.
There could be some contamination in there at low levels. If it says organic soybeans,
okay,
and the soybeans are intended to be non-GMO, as I said, there can always be some potential contamination.
Okay.
But the major brands of soy milk will say made with non-genetically modified beans because they know a lot of people are concerned about it.
Okay, and rice milk?
Rice is not genetically engineered
okay.
at this point.
Great, thank you.
You're in good shape. Okay, Jeanette, thanks so very much. All right, fine, we're going to be back here just to wrap up this program in just a moment. I guess this evening has been Jeffrey Smith, his book, Seeds of Deception. And ladies and gentlemen, you want to get the book. You want to read the book. You want to understand what we're talking about. And you really want to understand how, what you have to do to begin to protect yourself. And, of course, we keep talking about all the problems all the time. But if we don't talk about them, you're certainly not going to get them from the controlled media. So, well, bear with us and begin realizing that your family and your family's health is in your hands, not in the government's hands. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here for the final segment of our two-hour marathon with Jeffrey Smith, and he's kind enough to stay on with us, but didn't seem to have any problems, because there's really so much to cover in this subject. Jeffrey, we've got about 3 minutes. What's the final message you would like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I speak to a lot of groups around the world, and people get very emotional when they hear this information. People get angry or sad or fearful, and often feel like victims. And my main thing is to say people can use this opportunity and use that emotional energy and convert it into action and empowerment to swap victimhood to victorhood, to become a victor, to take control, to use this opportunity to become a turning point in your digestive life, to say, now I'm going to choose what I consider food. I'm going to choose what I put in my body. And it will take extra time, it will take some extra effort to avoid eating genetically modified foods. But I would recommend that people get on an email list, you can get on seedsofdeception.com, or you can get on one locally, to stay informed, to understand what's happening locally in your area to try and combat that. There's things happening all over the country, legislative efforts, GM-free school meals, GM-free farmers markets, all sorts of things. And I would say, use this information to become more empowered. Use this information to become more in control so that you don't walk away from this conversation feeling like a victim and feeling, you know, dragging your feet, but rather walking away saying, I am now going to look at my life and what I'm eating in a completely different light and not let the biotech industry and the corrupt U.S. government tell me what I should eat when I know better and know to try and avoid these potentially dangerous foods.
And I think when you know what is genetically modified, when you realize what the four major crops are, and then, of course, the growth hormone as far as the milk is concerned, and then the quick squash and the other one. But there are not that many things that are genetically modified at this time. You've just got to know that so many of these products, the corn oil, for instance, will be used in certain sugars and fructose and all these other things. So these are the things you're just going to have to avoid. If enough people in this country were educated and said, we're not going to put up with this, believe me, the manufacturers would turn away from it without a thought, because they're interested in making a profit. And if we can convince enough people and take a stand, why, you know, I think that this whole thing could be put behind us. I just hope it's put behind us before irreparable harm is done. Well, Jeffrey Smith, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And good night, and best of luck in your endeavors.
Thank you. I'll be on the History Channel tomorrow at the Modern Marvels second segment.
All right, fine. That's History Channel tomorrow. Bye-bye and God bless.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay, fine. That was Jeffrey Smith. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jeffrey Smith. His book, Seeds of Deception, that's Seeds of Deception. And if you'd like to know more about the book, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, this goes right along with so many of the other things that we've been talking about, how they're poisoning our children and us with the fluorides, and how the fluorides affect the fertility and lower the IQ and attack the bones and of course, attack the thyroid and, you know, produce infirmity and early aging and attack the endocrine system. And this is all known. They just don't want the American people to know that. That's why they're putting it in the water, because of course you have a much more compliant population, and you've got a dumbed down population. You pick up your newspaper and you say, oh, the Americans are top of international competition, why we're by, you know, just a little bit behind Mexico and Latvia and Lithuania. Well, they don't fluoridate the water in those areas, and we're dumbing down our children. We're damaging their brains. And you do the same thing with aspartame, which is NutraSweet. You do the same thing with mercury and the vaccines. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, that's the November newsletter, goes in the background of water fluoridation and the fact that this is being used for fertility control and, of course, to lower the IQ, to make the population more compliant. Why, yeah, I think it's a great newsletter. If you're, we'll be glad to send you a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to subscribe to our newsletter. You can do that by calling that same telephone number. Now, if you can't afford to do that, you go up on our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and pull down our newsletter, and you have our permission to copy the newsletter. We really want to get the information out across America. And if you want more information, we have a four-tape set on water fluoridation, and we have a four-tape set on NutraSweet, and we have several books, excitotoxins, the taste it kills, and for the dictionary on NutraSweet, the book is entitled Aspartame, the Forgotten Disease, or Forgotten Epidemic, Aspartame, the Forgotten Epidemic, I guess, by Dr. Roberts. It's almost 1,000 pages. You really need to get it. You need to understand what the dangers, and they've known that this was dangerous to people, and yet it was released anyway back in 1980. Thanks to the president of Cereal at that time, the cereal company that had the patent, the president's name just happened to be Donald Rumsfeld. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on mercury. We have videos on aspartame called A Sweet Misery. We have a visit, an excellent video on mercury called Uninformed Consent. You'll actually see the smoking tooth. That's not a truth. That's a smoking tooth, T-O-O-T-H. And, of course, with a mercury filler, you can actually see the fumes coming off of a mercury filling in your mouth. And if you have mercury fillings in there, why, give serious consideration to the fact that there's a definite correlation between Alzheimer's disease and mercury toxicity in the elderly. So, of course, it may be a genetic predisposition as well, but if you have the genetic predisposition and the mercury, why, you're in real trouble. All of these items we've mentioned available at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we ask you to tell others about our programs. If you'd like to get a copy of the program we did tonight, the 2 hours is fascinating. I think we will be putting together a four-tape set in the very near future. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because there are powerful spiritual forces behind this effort to harm our people, our children. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for revival because the American people don't turn back to God. Is there any reason why God should ever again bless this country? And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.